This is program C, 1152. We're in Revelation, chapter number 20, looking at the millennium, but we're spending our time for the last few days looking at passages from the Old Testament that describe what life in the millennium is going to be like. So far, we've looked at Hosea, Joel, Amos, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel. And then we got into the last part of the book of Zechariah yesterday. Zechariah was written during the 6th century BC, so several hundred years before Jesus comes on the scene. But the last three chapters of it are very, very detailed descriptions of the final days, the last days of earth, the 3.5 years of the day of the Lord, the second coming of Jesus, the Battle of Armageddon, and the setup and management of the millennium. And we were kind of looking at that as we closed off yesterday. Zechariah chapter 14, verse number, got to find the right spot where we're going to start. Verse 16. Then it will come about that any who are left of all the nations that went up against Jerusalem will go up from year to year to worship the king, Yahweh Tzabaoth, and to celebrate the Feast of Booths. So here we have some very specific citations. We've got survivors of the final 3.5 year period. People who came from those countries, those people groups, that tried to set up a kingdom that would stop Jesus from coming as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, but failed. These are going to be people who did not take the mark of the beast for whatever reason, but also had not named the name of Jesus as their Savior. So they're not going to be part of the resurrection and transformation of the immortals, but they were not part of those that were eternally condemned and those that were killed at the second coming of Jesus either. So this is going to be part of the millennial population. A lot of them will probably be kids, maybe even infants. I add to that group, in my own speculation, those resurrected from the past who had not yet been given a genuine opportunity to choose, because I think God puts a lot of emphasis on each individual making their own choice. So I expect babies and little children from the past to be resurrected, people with some sort of diminished mental ability of the past to be resurrected, and those that were isolated or incapable of hearing the good news or the message of God clearly during their time period. I think all of these very likely will be part of the millennial population of mortals. Those mortals are going to be required to come to Jerusalem every single year of the millennium at the Feast of Booths, which is interesting, the Feast of Tabernacles. Feast of Tabernacles is one of the three required attendance feasts for any adult male. And when we were talking about the symbolism of these feasts earlier, I showed you that Passover was fulfilled during Jesus' death and resurrection. Pentecost was fulfilled with the establishment of the church, and all of those things happened exactly on the day of the calendar that we're talking about. And I believe that Jesus will come back in connection with the fall festivals. Feast of Trumpets, which is the first day of the seventh month. I think that is the day on the calendar that Jesus will come back. That's my opinion. I'm not making a prophecy. I'm not making a prediction that you should hold me to. But that's what I expect. I expect that the Battle of Armageddon will take place on Yom Kippur, the 10th day of the 7th month, because that day, anyone who is not atoned for by the blood of the Lamb pays with their own blood for their sin. And so I think that's the symbolism to be expected from that. And then the Feast of Tabernacles was a celebration held from the 15th to the 22nd of the seventh month by the Israeli people to commemorate the fact that they were no longer in the wilderness. They were now in the promised land, living in their own inheritance. And I think the symbolism of that is very obvious. By the time we get to the millennium, we are no longer in the wilderness of sin. We're no longer in the wilderness of the curse. We are now in the promised land of the new heavens and the new earth in which righteousness dwells. And the Feast of Booths, the Feast of Tabernacles, was celebrated by looking backward and forward. The Jewish people looked backward to their Exodus experience. In fact, they would go to the Temple Mount with a special container of water. In the first century, this water was carried from the Pool of Siloam down at the south tip of the ancient city of Jerusalem, and carried all the way up to the Temple Mount and poured out next to the altar of sacrifice. This looked back to when God provided water miraculously from the rock during the wilderness experience of the Israelis. But it, as we've been looking in some of our other passages, looked forward to the fact that in the future, a spring of water would come up at that exact spot on the Temple Mount and would flow eastward and westward and along these ever-flowing stream, this ever-flowing stream would grow up the tree of life, the forest of life. And that is what we're seeing here, I think, predicted with the Feast of Booths. It is the annual celebration of the millennial reign of Jesus Christ. Now, anyone of the mortals who choose not to come up to that annual commemoration are going to get in trouble over it. And this is what it says. Verse 17 of Zechariah 14. It will be that whichever of the families of the earth does not go up to Jerusalem to worship the King, Yahweh Sabaoth, there will be no rain on them. If the family of Egypt does not go up or enter, then no rain will fall on them. It will be the plague with which Yahweh smites the nations who do not go up to celebrate the Feast of Booths. This will be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations who do not go up to celebrate the Feast of Booths. Now that's going to play into something we'll talk about next, but I want to mention it right now. And that is, the new heaven and new earth has a perfect environment. There is plenty of water for agriculture. Agriculture is wonderful. It's the Garden of Eden all over again. But that will be impacted negatively by any region where the majority of the people refuse to come and pay homage to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. They will not get their water supply. God will turn off the tap. And of course, if you don't have water, it doesn't matter how good the ground is. Doesn't matter how warm the weather is. If you don't have water, your crops are going to shrivel up and die. And if your crops shrivel up and die, you're not going to be able to eat, even if you're in paradise. And so my expectation is, over the thousand-year period, there will be some people who make their minds up that they don't like Jesus, they don't want to show loyalty to him, and so they're not going to come to Jerusalem every year at the Feast of Booths. And God will turn off their water. And when that happens, that's going to make them even madder, make them more upset. And they're probably going to move from place to place, trying to find a new location where there is still vegetation that's producing. And of course, once they arrive there, God will turn the water off there. And they will become harder and harder of heart the farther along their rebellion goes, until That group that we're talking about here will be the rebels of the Gog-Magog War that takes place at the end of the thousand-year reign. Now, the Gog-Magog War is not really so much a war as it is a riot that is put down fast. And we'll talk about that more later. But let's finish up here with the millennial passage from Zechariah 14. In that day, verse 20 says, there will be inscribed on the bells of the horses, holy to Yahweh. Now, that's exactly what was written on the little gold nameplate of the high priest. So even horses will be holy to God, just like the high priest used to be. And the cooking pots in Yahweh's house, that is, in the facility that is going to be there, will be like the bowls before the altar, meaning all containers will be holy to God because we're living in a holy period. Every cooking pot in Jerusalem and in Judah will be holy to Yahweh Tzabaoth, and all who sacrifice will come and take of them and boil in them, and there will no longer be a Canaanite. The idea here is a foreigner or a non-participant in the house of Yahweh Tzabaoth in that day. So we're using Zechariah's description here to picture perfection at Jerusalem. Everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be. All is holy, which is what God has been wanting from the very beginning. He made us in His image and likeness, and He has called us over and over again to be holy, even as He is holy. We've got one more passage that I want to go to. And by the way, I'm looking in my Living in the Last Days Prophecy seminar notes, which are online at endoftheword.net in the PDF resource section. I'm on page 103, and there's several pages, 101 through 103, that have all these Old Testament passages that seem to be describing life in the millennium. And so the last one I've got is from the little bitty obscure book of Zephaniah. Zephaniah is also written in the 6th century BC, just like Zechariah and Ezekiel. And this is what it says in starting in verse number 8. And I believe these are descriptions of the millennium. Therefore, wait for me, declares Yahweh, for the day when I rise up as a witness. Indeed, my decision is to gather nations, to assemble kingdoms, to pour out on them my indignation, all my burning anger, for all the earth will be devoured by the fire of my zeal. For then I will give to the peoples purified lips, that all of them may call on the name of Yahweh to serve Him shoulder to shoulder. So here you have a description of the final 3.5 years, God's wrath against those that will not serve, but His purification of those that are willing to serve. Verse 10, from beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, so way down south of Egypt, my worshipers, my dispersed ones, will bring my offerings. In that day you will feel no shame because of all your deeds by which you have rebelled against me, for then I will remove from your midst your proud, exalting ones, and you will never again be haughty on my holy mountain. So we have a description here of the purification process of the millennial period. Verse 12, but I will leave among you a humble and lowly people. They will take refuge in the name of Yahweh. The remnant of Israel will do no wrong and tell no lies, nor will a deceitful tongue be found in their mouths, for they will feed and lie down with no one to make them tremble. Again, a nice description of the millennial period. Shout for joy, O daughter of Zion. Shout in triumph, O Israel. Rejoice and exult with all your heart, O daughter of Jerusalem. Yahweh has taken away His judgments against you. He has cleared away your enemies. The King of Israel, Yahweh, is in your midst. You will fear disaster no more. In that day it will be said to Jerusalem, do not be afraid, O Zion. Do not let your hands fall limp. Yahweh your God is in your midst, a victorious warrior. He will exult over you with joy. He will be quiet in His love, and will rejoice over you with shouts of joy. I will gather those who grieve about the appointed feasts. This is a reference from earlier in the book about how the festivals were not being kept in a holy, appropriate, righteous fashion. So the people that were upset by unholy activity, by impious behavior, God's going to gather those together, the redeemed. They came from you, O Zion. The reproach of exile is a burden on them. Behold, I'm going to deal at that time with all your oppressors. I will save the lame and gather the outcast, and I will turn their shame into praise and renown in all the earth. In that time, I will bring you in, even at the time when I gather you together. Indeed, I will give you renown and praise among all the peoples of the earth when I restore your fortunes before your eyes, says Yahweh. So a nice way to finish up our Old Testament selection of millennial passages. All the evil stuff, all the shameful stuff, all of the things that were related to the curse, including being lame, being impoverished, being an outcast, all of that is going to be reversed in the millennial period for the righteous redeemed, the ones that are the called of the Lord. And that is the way it's going to go for 1,000 years. And in my notes on page 104, I reproduce a map of the Middle East with modern day lines of demarcation. But I put in some names that we're going to come across in our next study. And those are the names of the places that come into rebellion against the millennial reign of Jesus at the end of the 1,000 years. I've also got an approximation of what the highway of holiness could look like. Where it's coming from ancient Mesopotamia, all the way down into the Middle East at Jerusalem, and then way down in deep into Egypt. And how all along this highway of holiness, that's where the righteous redeemed immortals and the mortal believers are gathered, living in the land, and coming to Jerusalem every year at the Feast of Tabernacles. So they're all along that area. So what you should notice right away, is that the Highway of Holiness doesn't have any of the rebel zones anywhere in the Highway of Holiness zone. And the reason for that, I think, is something I've already mentioned. And that is, as the time goes by, those who don't want anything to do with Jesus are going to move farther and farther away from the area that is being administered by his people, where people who love him and want to serve him are living. And so I think we're talking about fringy areas that are going to be formed during the latter portion of the 1,000-year reign. And that is what's going to set up for our next study, and that is the Battle of Gog Magog. Revelation chapter 20, starting at verse 7, has a very brief thing to say about this battle. It says, whenever the 1,000 years has been completed, Satan will be released from his detention. So the 1,000-year reign of Jesus, Satan is gone. He's in the abyss. Apparently, all of his fallen angels, they're gone. They have no impact whatsoever on the choices made by humanity. I think this is another one of the reasons for the millennium, is to show that even without a tempter, even without somebody that's stirring the pot in the spirit world, people will still, in some cases, exercise their free will to go against God. So it's not the environment, because they're living in a perfect environment. It's not the government, it's not the leadership, because Jesus and his resurrection transformed immortals, they are administering a perfect government. during the thousand-year reign. And it's not outside influence either, because Satan is out of the picture. So the choices made by the evil, rebellious mortals during the thousand-year reign, clearly their own free will choice. That's the only thing that you can assign to it. So Satan is released from his detention, and immediately he goes out and rallies those who have already started rebelling. Verse 8, going out, he will deceive the nations in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, in order to gather them for war, their number being as the sand of the sea. Now, this is an exact parallel, using some of the same language, in Ezekiel chapter 38. Now, Ezekiel chapter 38 is all about a rebellion that takes place against God in the future. Now, some of you have been taught probably for a while now that the Gog-Magog war takes place before the second coming of Jesus. And they'll even relate it sometimes to the Battle of Armageddon. And they will talk about how some of the language matches language in the book of Revelation about the Battle of Armageddon. But the language that they're talking about is just language about how battlefields are littered with dead bodies which are scavenged by scavenger animals and scavenger birds. I don't think that that is much of a parallel. I think instead we should look at the precision that is being used here, and that is Gog Magog is used both in Revelation 20 and in Ezekiel 38 about a war against God after a long time of peace. And it involves certain areas that are on the fringe of the holy zone along the idea of the highway of holiness that we've talked about in a couple of different passages now. Let's read at the beginning of chapter 38 in Ezekiel. The word of Yahweh came to me, Son of man, set your face toward Gog of the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, or it's, I think, chief prince. Rosh in Hebrew means head or top prince. And so I don't think this has anything to do with Russia. In fact, when I was doing a study on it, I came to the conclusion that the name for Russia is not related to the Hebrew word Rosh or head. It's a different derivation. So the proper translation here is chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. And we know where Meshech and Tubal were located in the time of Ezekiel. And I've put them on the map. They were part of the Turkey area today. So prophesy against him. Now, him is Gog. I have discovered, when I was doing some of my research, that in one of the ancient languages, the word Gog, which is very close, it just uses a U sound instead of the O sound, and actually, the U and the O sounds are very much related in Semitic languages. So, Gog means shining one. Guess what? The ancient name for Satan was Halel in Hebrew, or Lucifer in Latin, and it means light bearer, shining one. And so I believe Gog in this passage is a direct reference to Satan himself. I think it's an old Mesopotamian name for him. And so the prophecy is against Satan, who is out there stirring the pot again for the first time in 1,000 years. Verse 3, and say, thus says my master Yahweh, behold, I am against you, O Gog, chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. I will turn you about and put hooks in your jaws, and I will bring you out and all your army, horses and horsemen, all of them splendidly attired, a great company with buckler and shield, all of them wielding swords, Persia, Ethiopia, Put with them, all of them with shield and helmet, Gomer with all its troops, Beth Togmar with from the remotest parts of the north with all its troops, many people with you. And you can see where I put them on the map on page 104 of my notes. All of these are ancient areas that would be on the fringe of the Holy Zone. So as I suggested to you earlier this session, I believe that the rebellion was already starting in the hearts of the mortals who refused to go to Jerusalem every year for the Feast of Tabernacles and were moving farther and farther away, and probably in their move, some of that was required because God would keep turning the tap off and their land would dry out. And so they would have to just go to another place where they thought that they could raise some more crops. And so they're getting farther and farther away, and I think that's very evident when you see this all plotted out on a map. So God is calling them to come and meet him in war, basically. Verse number 7, be prepared, prepare yourself, you and all your companies that are assembled about you, and be a guard for them. After many days, you will be summoned. In the latter years, you will come into a land that is restored from the sword, whose inhabitants have been gathered from many nations to the mountains of Israel, which have been a continual waste, but its people were brought up from the nations, and they are living securely, all of them. So the setup here is Satan and his hordes are being invited by God. Come on, take on the people who are in the millennial kingdom.